Okay, this is board time on Wednesday, 1:30, June 11th.
That's a reminder to go back to her office.
She's always a good site.
With your permission, Mr. Chair, I'd like to change the order of appearance.
Of course.
So Vanessa can. I think this morning we had the work session on the early adopter, and we were hoping to get a decision from the board authorizing Vanessa to write that letter to the healthcare authority to get the process rolling.
I suggested bringing it back here today because there's a whole bunch to absorb. I don't think that we had any real concerns. The expression that we were talking about was jumping off the roof or being pushed. Either way, we're going to go off the roof, right?
Right, absolutely. You've got to go with it.
And if you jump, you have a little more to say about
I
how you land.
I control myself a little bit.
Right. Put it.
Just don't jump in the water with hip boots on.
So does Vanessa have that authority?
Am I, early adopter? Certainly.
To proceed with the process.
I have an unfair advantage here. I've been sitting on the RSN board since January. So I've got exposed to a whole lot of information, plus one of the other agencies, Southwest Washington Aging and Disabilities. I love that organization that serves seniors. David Kelly is a champion for serving people in a way that makes great sense. And he's got, and plus Vanessa, Dr. Alan Melnick, and the individuals that I respect the most are... See, this is the smart way to go. And my own exposure to all these other puzzle pieces has led me to think that there's no other alternative. This is the smart way to go. Otherwise, it's going to be dragged along rather than be part of the leading party. So, yes, I'm absolutely. Early adopter is the only way that makes sense for me.
I don't have a problem with early adoption. I have a problem with being the first one to do it.
Actually, can I ask? So King County has informed me that they're going
to. Well, I can't use that for an example. Oh, my goodness. Thanks.
Well, they heard we were doing it, and they couldn't let us get out ahead of them.
They can't let Clark County beat King.
I think all of our hearts are in the right spot. And we want to see that health care is there and it's available to the people. I'm just so scared to death of the backlash. The fear of failure. This is a huge takings on. I think the route that we're going is the best way to take it on. But it is huge and is very, very concerning to me of the success of the program. Because while we have out there, we have all these services, and they're over here, and they're over here, and they're over here. They're working, and they're working well. Today, we're going to combine those and put somebody else in charge of it. It scares me a little bit.
Well, you know, I can tell you a little story.
Is it short?
Well, to use the word little, I'm going to take the best time to say this.
Oh, no.
I love stories. I want to hear your story.
It'll be short.
go ahead, take your time.
We started Health and Welfare in 1954, the Harris Electrical Workers, and John Hancock was the insurance carrier. And it went on for several years. And, of course, the whole time that we had the program going on, it covered all of Oregon, Southwest Washington Electricians and their family. Now it's about 40,000.
What program is that?
Harris Electric Workers Trust.
Okay.
And so it covers about 43,000 people now in Oregon, Washington, under that program. So I kept after them. When I became a trustee in 1973, to start looking at become self-insured. And the reason why, I could see the insurance premium going to the state of Oregon big time, and it kept increasing, kept increasing. Mm-hmm. And I could never convince them and to basically get rid of John Hancock,
That's safe. I want it safe.
Yeah, get rid of insurance carrier that we had, and So anyway, they kept saying, no, we can't do that. You know, we, this is the way we've done it for years and years. And I said, well, you got to start, and I'll use Don Benton's thing, you got to think outside the box sometime.
Write this down. did the newspaper get that? So,
anyway, quoting Don Benton.
Yeah, so anyway, I've heard him use
that. Who knows
a lot
where you're going to get pearls and wisdom.
So anyway, when I became trustee in 73, I started really pounding on them hot and heavy. And then when I became elected as business manager, financial secretary in 83, I became the chair of that trust, where I had a little bit more muscle, a little bit more say. And so it took me a year to convince the rest of the trustees, the National Electrical Contractors Association, and them that we needed to quit paying the premiums to the state
to become self-insured.
And that whole time from 73 to 1984, we were paying out $1 million a year insurance premium. So what I did with that money, we'd never had maternity benefits, we never had dental, we never had the wellness program, all these different programs we were able to accumulate. So my thought is, Tom, and in this case where they're telling you that it's going to be mandated by 2020, and they're going to give you a 10%, you know, kicker in order to make it happier, get you involved in it, I'm one of them that says, why continue to spend money that you don't have to spend? I think that we need to get on board with this thing. And like I say, as a new person that's sitting in this, I can see a whole lot of the benefits from it, from the first meeting we had and the meeting mm-hmm. we had this morning. And I think rather than prolong it, I think we ought to go ahead and buy into mm-hmm. it. My so, personal belief.
So as chairman here, I my job is to interpret what right. Dave Medora says and what you said. So I think we have 3 votes.
Well, it sounds like we're working together with, and I'm glad to hear that you're a decision maker. You don't sit on it forever to be able to, especially, this is a major decision. And you're coming in new on this, and yet you learn to the degree, you pay attention to the degree where you're able to make a choice, a competent choice. So that's a good sign. I'm encouraged. I think we made a good choice.
Okay, so that's issue number one. There are two others. I'll let Vanessa articulate those. And so, Commissioner Medora knows a lot about those two things too. So
this is what I'm going to do is I'm going to work with Chris Horn to draft a letter that will go to Healthcare Authority, which is Dorothy Teeter, the secretary, and we're going to ask the three of you to sign it because that sends something to them. But Skamania County would actually like to sign on to the same letter, and we're going to ask Klickitat because we think it's better to have all three county commissions on the same page.
It's a coalition at that point. It says that it sends a very strong and confident and good signal to them at the state.
And we're going to send it to the health authority. And here's what we're asking them to do is to meet with us, come to the table, and negotiate on the terms for what the early adopter model and process should look like. Mm-hmm. And then if we can come to agreement, we're going to ask them to put it in writing. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to ask you to officially approve it. So we can actually put that in writing back up to WASAC and the state.
Ed, you ought to be really comfortable with that. This is kind of like we're forming a union here and we're naming our terms. We got some power behind us. That
one
sounds
question.
Really good.
Okay.
That 10% savings, where's that coming from?
So that's going to come from, like, if you can show you did savings in emergency room visits, like if people weren't in an inpatient, before the state takes that, put it in their coffer. They're now saying we will return it back to your community.
Okay.
That's great.
That's one of the things we always talk about, getting the insurance company and the hospital on board and have somebody there to basically sort people out, what's a common cold, what needs to be at the emergency room, mm-hmm. and put them in a taxi and send them down to the clinic. Do the same thing. I think we'll experience far greater savings than 10%.
Mm-hmm. So I don't... Mark, I think why this is on the agenda
has
to do with the tribe and the weighted.
Vote. Yes, it's tribe membership and the weighted proportional voting question.
And
actually, he ought to be here as well, but I can share, or you're welcome to share too about this. However, whatever do you feel like would be appropriate?
So just to let you know, and Chris Horn definitely needs to be here to talk about what's in the interlocal, because he wrote that interlocal. That came from Chris Horn, and the other prosecuting attorneys agreed to it. So there's two issues at stake here. So the first issue has to do with the Cowlitz Indian tribe. The state law says that RSNs must work with the tribe and do a plan of action. It's called a 701 plan. That's in place.
Mm-hmm.
But the other law says that you may include them in your governance board. It says may, not shall. As part of the planning, the 701 plan, you do have to include them in your advisory board. They are on the advisory board. They're interpreting the law is to say they shall be on the governing board. And so they're basically saying they want to come on Southwest Behavioral Health Board. And we don't. It's not that we don't want them on the board. We're asking them mm-hmm. to assume financial risk, mm-hmm. as all the other counties have, mm-hmm. and maybe put some money into the reserves like mm-hmm. all the other counties have. Mm-hmm. And they have said no to both of those.
Mm-hmm. And we've addressed that to some degree here already, and mm-hmm. we said if they want to be a player, mm-hmm. they're going to pay.
And Commissioner Braun, this is his issue, mm-hmm. Is that he feels that Clark County is violating the law, and that we can get sued, and he's asking us to reconsider and accept their terms as is and put them on the RSN board.
Mm-hmm. But our legal staff says
they said they don't interpret the law like that, and they're saying they need to be held to the same standard as the other counties would be.
Yeah.
Well, my comment would be, since this is not just the maybe accounting problem, I got it wrong a little bit, but since the Cowlitz have signed part of the accord with the state of Washington, whether it's transportation or whatever it is. I think that in order to make sure that not just from the attorney here for the county, prosecuting attorney's office, but I think maybe be appropriate if we ask Bob Ferguson with the state attorney general's office his opinion as to what the law actually says and what it doesn't say. That way, then you can inform them that the attorney general for the state says, like Tom says, if you want to play, you got to pay. And I know the Cowlitz really well, so I think that's just a matter of getting the right people.
Mm-hmm. Is Chris coming?
So second opinion
for me, please.
And just we did a quick, just real quick research as to what the other RSNs are doing. So, and they're all different. So one RSN, North Sound, that's up north, five counties, Snohomish County and going north. The tribe is on the board in an advisory role because they will not assume risk. So they're there in advisory role. But Peninsula, which is Kitsap, what's the other two counties around us? Kitsap, help me understand. You know
Mason.
Not Mason, but I think it's...
Peninsula. We know Peninsula.
I can't think of the counties that are near the Bremerton Kitsap area. Great Harbor, separate.
But it doesn't matter.
Whatever they are.
I think it is Jefferson. Those three counties, each county has the same vote on there. The tribe is on their board with one vote. And they allow them not to have to do financial risk. So they have a governing authority vote, and they're covering them with some extra insurance. So Greater Columbia is another one that has 10 counties. The tribe, Yakima Nation, is on that board. They do have a vote. I don't know what the risk is because we couldn't get that in time. So I just went over the tribal issue, Chris.
Sure.
So you want to take it over, so.
Well, we met with... The three lawyers have met a couple of times, and really different lawyers representing the same parties, because this same issue has been going on for some time, really, for some time. When Steve Jensen was the chief civil deputy, or is the chief civil deputy, but was the attorney representing Cowlitz, Adam Kick and he and I met, and we both were in agreement, or all three of us were in agreement, that it was really not even responsible to allow somebody to help determine your destiny and not take responsibility for their decision. They could potentially, under the wrong set of circumstances, create a liability that you might have to pay and not have to share in the cost of that decision. And that just seemed irresponsible and bad policy. So we, the three attorneys at least, and obviously we don't make policy, we just advise boards, but we were pretty much in agreement that our vote and our advice to our clients was going to be going forward, even at the first meeting on this issue, that if the tribe wanted to be a participating member, to sit at the table, to hear testimony, to listen, to preside, to discuss, to do all those things and deliberate, that was all fine. But when it came to taking votes, if they wanted to vote and make policy, that they had to be responsible for that policy. Later on, that issue was communicated to the tribe, and they said, no, we want a right to vote, and we're not waiving our sovereign immunity, so we're not accepting any responsibility. We met again just the day before the last meeting in Skamania County, and it was Dana Gigler, who is the new attorney for Cowlitz County, myself and Adam Kick for Skamania County, and the three lawyers again worked through the statute, worked through the issues, and discussed the legal position. And while the board certainly has the legal authority to allow them to waive that, we would not advise you to exercise it in that form. Again, they can take actions, they can be involved, they can do everything right up to voting. And if they want to vote, then their percentage of the responsibility would be so minor that it is almost nominal, but they need to have some skin in the game, was even the view in the most recent meeting. So there's two really related issues to the voting that really require everybody's agreement. One had to do with this question of tribal vote, and the second had to do with the weighting of the votes. I think most of the RSNs have all done something similar to Clark County. There's a state law based on the equal protection portions of the Constitution that say that where officials become members of other boards because of their elected status, so you become a member of CTRAN or you become a member of some board because of your elected status, to give equal effect to the voters who put you in office in comparison to the voters for the city of Vancouver or some other jurisdiction, Battleground or La Center, to give equal effect to everybody's voters, you have to do something that reflects the weighting of votes. Otherwise, the voters in Battleground who would have an equal vote would actually have a greater weight per capita than the voters in Clark County. And so we relied on a memorandum that was issued by Hugh Spitzer, and he's a pretty well-known constitutional lawyer for Foster Pepper. It's a fairly big law firm that we use for bond purposes, but rely on occasionally for other issues. He gave me his memo. If you look to the boards that have implemented an RSN from multiple counties, many of them have the same thing we do, although in different forms. They either weight votes by giving multiple members to bigger counties, or they weight them the way we did. Most, maybe all, provide weighting in the form of biggest counties get the most number of members. If they vote together, clearly their vote is given a greater weight. And we just chose to have a smaller board, but we weighted the vote by saying our vote counts for three. There's Cowlitz counts for two, and Skamania counts for one. That can be changed. If this board has an idea of how that should go forward, that can all be changed. Part of the practical issue for you to think about is, if the whole nature of this relationship is likely to evolve and change, is now a good time to go into that? And I'm not ducking the issue. I'm certainly willing to provide you the advice and the analysis and help you work through it. But at least somewhere in this, before you invest a whole lot of time, might be worth asking the question, given that we're likely by 2016 to be in a completely different scheme, no matter what scheme you're in, you're either going to be as a behavioral health organization, we know that based on the changes in the legislative scheme that dictates, mm-hmm. or you're going to be a RSA, a regional network,
early adopter
is the other term they use. You're going to be another kind of an organization by 2016. So the only effect of any of these changes is going to be this
short-lived,
12 to 14 month period. Well, maybe a little more, but less than 2 years period between now and then. And for those reasons, practically, it may not make sense to deal with this because there's a lot of other things to do between now and then. Again, that's a judgment call for you. That's kind of the background to how we got where we are.
And if I can just also add, the board that created Southwest Behavioral Health was also looking at fairness. And so they wanted to make sure that a big county with close to 500,000 people in population would never kind of overrule a small county like Skamania with 20,000 or Cowlitz with about 100,000. So they gave 3 votes. And they did Cowlitz 2 and Skamania 1. So that way, Clark would always have to get a small county to agree to something. And the small counties couldn't overrule Clark County and do something that would hurt our urban areas. And so that they had to always have agreed. So it was meant to do consensus voting.
Chris, there's a comment that it could be against the law and we could get sued. Is there a gray area to this?
I think the argument that we could get sued, well, first of all, as you've found out, we can always get sued. But the fact that they can sue you, the statute requires that we create a mechanism for making them a partner. Mm-hmm. The board has voted to create a mechanism for making them a partner. They just don't like the mechanism you created. The statute doesn't say that they get to join under the terms they dictate. It says they get to join. And you can set reasonable terms under which this whole thing occurs. So, mm-hmm. Yes, they could sue, but I don't think there's a lot of risk in that. No. And I think Cowlitz and Skamania County are on the same page as Clark County in regard to that. I think there's almost no damage that's been done to them. They've been given the opportunity to participate. Mm-hmm. So there's no damages. The statute doesn't say what they want it to say, mm-hmm. and we've done everything the statute has required.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I don't have a problem in where we are today, knowing that.
Yes, and because I'm one of the commissioners, one of the three that sit on that governing board, our working relationship has been fantastic from the very beginning. All three of us commissioners were new as of January last year. We inherited a months-old, brand-new organization. And I think all but one of our votes have been unanimous all along. We get along very, very well. Only recently, we had a special meeting and then this last meeting, I think they're very interested in the future of this new early adopter organization. It appears that Cowlitz County is not on board with the early adopter, and they would like people to change the votes that they have one vote, we have one vote. And so, in other words, they'd like people to change Clark County's direction for the future. And it looks like they're likely going to go there with the northern county neighbor because of the early adopter versus the behavioral health organization. So at this last meeting, they pushed as hard as they can push. You were twittering or that whole...
it's called play-by-play.
That's the word, the term I was looking for. So I see this also, especially if we're making the decision today, we are going to go early adopter. That means we are entering into a time of transition. And the interlocal agreement that we have right now, anyway, expires at the end of next year. And that's also the time that we need to be able to actually have implemented the full integration of the early adoption. So this is, I agree, is this the time? I would say, no, this is a time when we don't want to add any extra changes that are not necessary, especially if we're working together very well.
So you still want to keep...
Oh, hi, come in.
You're saying you still want to keep the 3, 2, and 1?
Right, no changes.
Right, no change here as we move forward into the early adoption. It's the same thing. If they want to participate, you pay if you want to play, right?
They are part of the tribe, is part of the RHA, which is interesting, and they also contribute financially to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why they won't do RSN. So.
Yes, and also we have, actually I say we, the RSN has done everything to really make sure that they're going above and beyond and that all of the needs are being met. In fact, we have an obligation. If somebody requests service, we can't even deny it. I mean, so all of the needs are being met. There's never been a complaint that they're not being served, whatever. They're a great contributing group especially in Cowlitz County. So really healthy relationship there. But I think, Chris, the point that you made, I think, is valid, and that is that these decisions, we're signing up for obligations to pay, to be liable, and anybody who makes that decision, the reason that we're sitting on that board is because we are taking on that risk, and we are obligated to ensure that is true. If you have a member of the board who says, sure, I'm going to vote for that, sounds good to me, I'm not going to have to pay for it, but I want it, well, that becomes irresponsible. And so that's why I think it's reasonable to stay with the condition that was already early adopted when this RSN was formed, that the RSN would be, or the Cowlitz tribe would be invited with the condition that you also stand behind your decisions with your obligations, as every other governing board member does.
So, and also, I don't know why it wouldn't be somewhat mute, because we're looking at early adoption, and they don't want that, is that right?
Cowlitz County doesn't want that.
Right.
What about the
tribe? Cowlitz County.
The Cowlitz Indian tribe is interested in early adoption.
Oh,
I think
okay.
It makes sense.
Okay.
Do you feel who represents the Cowlitz on the programs down there now for the Cowlitz tribe?
For the Regional Health Alliance, their clinical director, and he's also on the Cowlitz Indian Governing Board. His name is Steve Kutz.
So, Menace, do you feel like that there, if everybody else comes in, do you think Cowlitz will more likely feel the pressure to become part of the group?
No. I think Cowlitz County government, for multiple reasons, is right now really strong with BHO.
Okay.
One of the things, you may not have been here, you have to pay to play. You have mm-hmm. to take up some responsibility. And for some reason, they don't want to take that step to be with us.
But for you people, it gets you off the hook, too. I mean, this is I believe, is a great program for you. I mean, I think it will reduce your exposure.
You're talking about the early adoption? Actually.
Well, the whole thing. I mean, once it's fully implemented.
Yes, and we took an action just earlier, and that is we've unanimously decided that we will go early adoption, and what's on the table now is the...
This is what happens, Dave, when you're late. I'm feeling the love, brother.
When you're late, you just get the good news.
I was running. That is good news, so I appreciate the good news.
Can you make your argument?
I thought I was still fighting for you, brother. I was still fighting for you.
I'll receive that.
we already took the vote.
Oh, my God.
Now we're
hey, Melody, were you with him?
But there is.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
But there is another related part, and that's what we're on right now.
Okay.
And it is that the other two governing board members want to know officially if we want to change the voting weight of the RSN. Right now, Clark has 3 votes, Scamini has 2, and Cowlitz has 1. Scamini has 1 vote, and Cowlitz has 2. And they want to be able to change it so each one has 1, and add the Cowlitz Indian tribe, and have everybody have 1. And the process for doing that is kind of formal, because you're changing your bylaws, you're changing your interlocal agreement, and so we, as individual RSN members, RSN board members cannot make that decision. It's something where we should take official action here, pass some kind of resolution that Chris can prepare that would say, this is our position as Clark County, and then I, as a representative to the RSN board, would bring that position and say, here's Clark County's position. I don't speak as an individual. I speak as a ambassador of the county from as represented by the whole VLCC.
That's exactly what
so basically,
okay,
basically
let's move
Chris,
on.
Chris has made the determination as the attorney for the commission that he's recommending that we stick to the present policy that mm-hmm. you've already adopted. Is that what you're saying?
What you've adopted in the past is legal. The policy behind it is, I think, well-founded. Ultimately, I think the most defensible position for the public, because one of the only other thing I'll mention that I haven't said before, the county was pretty wise user of the public funds, and we saved a good deal of money in the reserves. And when we became a member of this RSN, we transferred those monies like we should because they go to these programs, and so we did all those things. We put a lot of money into this that we had saved up so that in the event something bad happened or needed to happen, we would have funds aside for those. Part of the weighted vote was to recognize that as the biggest player with the most responsibility and the most funding, that this weighted vote should occur. So both the weighted vote and the responsibility for that vote and the money that was going to be spent, because we're talking about millions of dollars, was all tied together, and that's why we agreed on a 3-2-1 vote together with everybody taking responsibility. And by the way, our responsibility is not equally shared with Cowlitz or Skamania. We take on a greater level of responsibility because we were trying to be fair in this whole thing, and we said if we have a greater vote, with greater power comes greater responsibility, and we took on a greater share of the liability. So the action was really all tied together as a sort of a logical unit, and yeah, I would recommend that the board continue that going forward.
So, Chris, should we put this on a consent item and just simply pass a resolution that says this is our position and bring that official position to them, or is you feel like it would be sufficient enough at this board time to, if we end up with a unanimous agreement, that this is our position?
Well, I'm not sure how this was noticed on for your for purposes of doing a resolution, so I guess the safest thing I would propose that you do would be to put it on consent. I'll prepare a resolution. Direct me how you'd like me to go forward, and I'll have it ready.
It's not different than what we're already doing.
No.
It just makes it...
So I don't understand why we all of a sudden, after a couple of years, we're going to take action.
We have to re-resolve to do what we're already doing.
You would understand more if you were there at the play-by-play.
So this is a tool to help you resist the pressure you know will come again.
Yeah, talk to my bosses.
This is a very affirming position, really.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good time to do that.
In a very solid...
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll put that on the...
Indisputable way.
On the calendar for
we can have it on for next Tuesday.
If you're quick.
I can be ready.
Okay.
Real quick.
Great, thank you.
Do we have enough time for public notice?
Well, we don't. The notice only has to go out because this is on consent. The notice only has to be out by Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, we're fine for
notice. Yeah.
What, 5 days then?
Yeah, you don't. A legal notice for the Open Public Meetings Act doesn't have the same requirements as a public hearing or a police power regulation.
Okay.
So this is administrative.
And for our guests that you wonder what champion has walked into the room here, this is State Representative Paul Harris.
Yeah, I voted for that ugly bill that we're messing with. Sorry about that. But I think ultimately it will help, actually. I really believe that.
Well, what we heard today is that it takes a number of these individual silos and allows the patient to receive the kind of help that they need. And I know just simply one of the outcomes of this is just in this one little silo that I'm familiar with for the RSN, we are accumulating millions of dollars of Medicaid funds we can do nothing with. They're just sitting in reserves. So it was started out at $17 million last year, and now they're at $28 million, and it's keep going like this because the money's flowing in to do good, and this one little entity isn't able to do anything because they have mental health services, and there are other physical health and those other things that this would allow that to serve the citizen better.
Certainly,
we already do that.
So it's
a different pocket.
Well, the thing is, it's stuck in our pocket, and there's no provision for transferring out to any other pocket.
Okay.
Thanks.
So what was the vote count on that?
I don't remember. You know, you've been up there. All I just know is it passed. And I think it passed pretty easily, to be honest with you.
Oh, I have to ask you. I think it was
Democrats. Pretty, I think it was pretty one-sided.
No, actually.
Ed's been giving me a tough time.
That's called bipartisanship.
No, I think it was pretty bipartisan. I look at this as reducing a layer of government and being giving you more autonomy, actually, in the county. I think there's a lot of wins here for you. I really do.
But it passed anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, next.
Thank you, Vanessa.
Sorry.
Thanks.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's all right.
Mm-hmm.
Are you done with me?
Yes, sir.
Can I jump, Marty, to next in line?
Thank you, Vanessa.
Thank you for doing this.
Okay.
Thank you. You leave it?
You want me here?
What'd you come for?
You're welcome to stay as long as you want.
I came for the don't feel the behavior. But I'll stay. I'll hang tight.
Oh, we are going to free.
I know.
He was gonna correct us if we made the wrong call.
No, I thought I just. Since I created the mess, I thought I'd
ask more questions to see if you know what you voted for.
I know what I voted for.
Okay.
So recently, Commissioner Madore asked to see the procedure for addressing code enforcement issues. And so we provided that to Commissioner Madore, but then Commissioner Mielke, you suggested that we have a little refresher session and a board time, and also to let our brand new commissioner, Commissioner Barnes, know what that process is in the event that he gets
a
code enforcement complaint.
Wineries or what?
Just
in general what the process is. And okay. As part of his, Marty, I'll shut up here in a minute so you can talk, but as part of his Tidemark replacement process, all of his processes have been reduced to writing so that when the new vendor comes in, they know exactly how we do things so they can match the software to our processes. And so this is the process for code enforcement complaints. So with that, Marty, I'll turn it over to you.
So does it look like this? Does it look like this?
Looks just like that.
Yeah.
I don't have the shaded out part, but that's what it is.
Yeah, you're talking step by step, and then what are the inputs, the outputs, the references. So I'm gonna go off this, which is my handwriting and a cheat sheet. So any kind of code enforcement issue we're dealing with, the first step that we take is you know, we'll get on the phone or we'll have a letter, and we might do that a couple times. So you know, we try to have folks come in and to the permit center and apply for what they need to apply for before we send out any real nasty grants. If at the end of the day that doesn't work, we actually mail a letter, and it's called a notice of violation and order of compliance, otherwise known as notice and order. That gives the property owner, business owner, whomever, it's kind of putting them on notice that we've done an inspection of the property, we've confirmed a violation of XYZ county code, and that we order them to come in and comply with whatever it is that they need. There's also an appeal period to that notice and order. I believe it's 14 days, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't appeal that notice and order, which goes to a county hearings examiner, then we move on down the line, which is to submit a letter to that same party informing them that we have an intent to file a lien on the property. We give them another probably 10 to 14 days for them to come in and get whatever permit or application that they need. And in failure to do so, we actually file a lien on the property and we accrue fines for however long the penalty exists or for however long the noncompliance issue exists. We've had cases go on for, you know, days, weeks, months, years. And those that have gone on for extended periods of time, we talked about this, I think, a couple weeks ago, we do remove the lien and we kind of negotiate a settlement, so to speak, once the underlying code enforcement action is taken care of. Chris is all too familiar with this, and he can kind of weigh in or augment what I've said.
First, I'll make one small correction to what I just agreed to, which is the appeal period. It's actually 10 days.
Okay.
But there's a choice, sort of a priority of approaches that the county can take for code enforcement. The board a long time ago directed staff to use notices in order because they provide an ability to leverage or put some pressure on property owners who haven't gotten permits, who are causing nuisances to the neighborhood, who are making noise, any number of things that we wind up seeing. But always give us the ability to work with them once they've come into compliance. That's the first level of penalty or enforcement that can be used. For people who are second or subsequent violators, for people with more serious violations, there's an alternate system in which you can issue a citation, which is very much like a speeding ticket. It's a one-time penalty. It's appealable, but the only authority to the hearings examiner is to say whether it happened or not. If he says it happened, then you pay the fee. If he says he didn't, you don't. So that's your second alternative, and those tend to go out more for stormwater violations, developers who aren't using erosion control, those kinds of penalties. And then most seriously, we have authority under the code to issue criminal citations and prosecute those through our office. Those are rarely, if ever, used. They're usually reserved for the most serious of offenses. We've had people connect their septic systems and dump human waste on the open ground and create real health hazards for surrounding areas. And in those kinds of cases, you might see our office contemplating a criminal action, but they are pretty few and far in between. The only thing I'd say about us working with the neighborhood is the code and state law give us the authority to ask a court on occasion to go onto the property. It requires a search warrant, and we will go on the property and clean it up ourselves. And then we will put a lien on the property to attempt over time to recoup the money that it's cost. We did it once. A person out in Brush Prairie had some 50 or 60,000 tires on his property, and it was not only a fire hazard, it actually was a mosquito hazard because of the water that's stored in those.
I know just exactly where that's at.
Okay. In any case, so that was one. We've had a couple. Some illegal construction that actually represents a serious safety hazard, and we've asked the court to do that. But that's a mechanism that we can use. Overall, I guess what I would pass on is that the county tends to be pretty cooperative in working with property owners. The last thing we want to do is take somebody's land if we can avoid it. And if anything, what typically you'll hear an allegation from a neighborhood is that we didn't go fast enough, that we may have spent too much time trying to work with them. But that has been the practice in the past. We will go forward. We will get orders. And we have, on occasion, even created funds to try and work with. You'll see situations where older people allow their kids to come back home. The kids store garbage on the property. It becomes a nuisance. We have to clean it up. We'll bring dumpsters out there, and the neighborhood will actually help clean up the site. So we do some of those kinds of things to help bring the properties into compliance. But by and large, from a 1,000-foot level, that's sort of the process in a nutshell, and I'm glad to answer any questions you might have.
Do we, in the complaint form, do we at that time make a notice of lien?
No. No, they have a right to have, from a due process fairness standpoint, they have a right to have the facts determined. So they have 10 days after we issue what is basically an allegation. We allege that there's a problem. They have a right to contest that, and they can go to a hearing, a neutral hearings examiner. We call witnesses. You make objections. It's somewhat informal, but they have a right to a hearing and to challenge that. If they either waive that because they don't appeal or because a finding's actually entered against them, then after so many days that becomes final, and now it's concluded that they are in violation of the code, and now it only becomes a question of what are we going to do to clean it up.
So when we give them that time, and after that time frame is up that they're supposed to comply, then do we file an intent to lien?
Yeah, we usually will give them, part of it, rarely is it that claim where they just ignore you. Usually what happens is when you send out the letter after the order becomes final, they say, yep, we're on our way, we're working, we're cleaning, and they start. You know, they'll start and they do A, and they'll just do one thing. So you think, okay, well, they're making progress. And then they stop. So you send out the next letter. Somewhere in that first couple letters, yes, we will, number one, send out a lien. We'll say what they are for the total amount, and we'll follow it up. After a few months, if nothing else has happened, we'll update the lien and increase the amount. And they jump up fairly fast because the penalties are between $250 and $400 per day. Yeah. So you can quickly see how in 30 days, you're now over $1,200 to $1,500.
I remember Mr. Teeter. And so in my understanding, in some cases, we don't file a lien. We file just the intent to lien, and we never file the lien.
Usually,
if you follow through with the actual lien on the property, we have to update that lien every so often?
Well, a lien is only good for 3 years, so if you don't update it expires. And usually if we record something because of the recording fees, we usually don't record an intent to lien. It's a lien itself because it costs money, and if we're just going to send out letters, we save the recording. Mm-hmm. But the code gives the director, whether it's Public Works or Environmental Services or Community Development, the authority to negotiate those. So once you get somebody into compliance, you as a board have directed staff to recoup your administrative costs. So we're not losing money. We're trying to keep the system afloat as much as possible. And then we will be flexible with the property owner in trying to figure out a fair penalty and then move on. It's not a money-making operation.
Well, usually it's not.
Yeah.
How does a person, is there somebody in the department downstairs or someplace that if a citizen wants to come in and file a complaint against his neighbor, who is here that they can talk to in order to know how to fill out this complaint form?
There are two people predominantly who handle that. Kevin Pridemore and Donna Goddard from code enforcement are the primary people in the sort of zoning land use arena that you would have complaints to. If it's a stormwater or erosion control type of problem, one that you typically think of Environmental Services being involved in, that would be Scott Melville.
Garbage and stuff on the property.
That would be Don and Kevin.
And I work with those people all the time because people call our office regularly. So at any given time, I've got 3 to 5 cases that I'm working with either Scott Melville, Donna Goddard, or Kevin Pridemore on. Because what will happen is someone will say the enforcement's going too far and it's unfair, or the other person will say the enforcement's going too slow and it's not happening fast enough. So I sort through the facts with code enforcement, and we try to get to the right answer.
A few years back, we decided not to accept anonymous complaints. Right? We still have that in place. I didn't say here.
Yeah, there's even on the form you can check a box that says I wish to remain anonymous. Yeah.
But we notify them.
We know who they are.
Yes.
But they,
yes.
Yeah.
And if we wind up going to hearing, they have a right to confront their accuser, so yeah, we tell that person that if it's going to hearing that they will have to appear and testify, mm-hmm, and be willing to face it. They're sometimes pretty, they're tough on a neighborhood, but if you get to the point where you actually have to go to hearing, you have to call them as a witness.
No, we had competing businesses complaining about
you. Well, and that happens too.
That's what brought that up.
That's a difficult one, because I'll occasionally field a call from someone who will be reporting maybe a pretty significant issue but not want their name or to be associated with the complaint. So it's a judgment call because, you know, maybe it's, you know, maybe the neighbors are very close and this person doesn't want, you know, so you have to kind of decide how to handle it.
We have to at least know.
He doesn't want his neighbor to burn him out.
Yeah.
I want to point something out here, too, and I'm thankful the process spells this out. Right at the little text box up above, it says, it talks about the process. A citizen can file a complaint or inquiry by calling the county, and then a code enforcement officer will follow up. What's really important about that is the culture and the process does not allow for a proactive, aggressive, activist code enforcement staff that goes out there and starts patrolling, looking for trouble. It's complaint driven by the citizens, and we are the responders. We are not the initiators. And we take it one step further. If someone comes in for a permit, they want to be able to do something, get a permit for their house, there may be on the property some other buildings or something like that point, what we don't do is we say, oh, I see you got another piece of another thing over there. Well, I'm going to check with them for all the codes and everything, and then all of a sudden that citizen regrets ever coming in and going through the process to try to get a permit. So if they are applying for a permit for a structure, the staff looks and focuses on that structure and doesn't go proactive searching what else on the property can I find offenses for. Is that right?
There is a caveat to that, though. If it's a structure that's occupied, if it's an addition, or a structure that's in fact has occupancy, we have a duty under the state building code to make sure that meets the requirements.
What
if it's some outbuilding? If it's a, you know, what we don't know, we don't mess with non-habitable structures or additions.
Chris?
What I was going to say is staff has tried to. Where you have those happening, it was deemed important to make sure we got that building in compliance and not drive them away. So mm-hmm. It's true that we focus on the building before us.
Right.
We do, in fact, make sure they know that if we get a complaint about this building, we're coming in, or if there's a life safety problem, we are coming in, because you can't. We do as Marty indicated, we have a mandatory obligation under the Uniform Building Code under 1927 RCW to enforce it, and those kinds of things we can't walk away from. But we do try to promote the policy of dealing with the building permit at hand, and
yes.
then and trying to get mm-hmm. voluntary compliance on the other issues,
mm-hmm.
and try to work with the property owners.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we're dealing with the shorthand is we deal with a permit that's in hand,
mm-hmm.
and we're dealing with here now.
Yeah.
And if there's something. We deal with that as a subsequent.
Yes,
involved.
I understand. If we are aware of a negligence or a dangerous situation, then of course we have a moral responsibility to ensure that that is taken care of. But what we don't do is we don't become the Gestapo and go out and inspect and look for opportunities for fines and liens.
So I'll give you, for instance, in our neighborhood, the house has been sitting there for 3.5 years, and it was built brand new without picking out any permits for wiring, for plumbing, or anything else. It still has the big red tag on the fence that this house was on. And what they did, it went into foreclosure by the bank, and the guy in Lake Oswego took the thing over on foreclosure, not knowing that it had this problem with it. And I can show you the house. It's a beautiful, from the outside, it looks like it's a beautiful house. But on the inside, it's just absolutely a disaster, whoever did the electrical and the plumbing and stuff. And it's been sitting there I can show you, Dave, it's been sitting there for 3.5 years. And pretty soon the people are moving into that area down there, or somebody's going to start occupying it. It's going to go up in flames.
Well, how'd they get PUD power?
It doesn't have any PUD power.
Oh, it had no power to it.
No.
But PUD is pretty, I mean, what they require for a permit, an L&I permit, is only compliance up to there,
right.
And you can, if you stage it right, if you get a rough-in, I mean, there are two permits,
right.
You get a rough-in permit for your initial wide width.
Yep.
I'm preaching the choir, you know
right.
all this better than I do. But there is a way that you can build, you can get your initial permits to get wiring in place and water into the house and still not comply with the building or electrical codes.
I didn't think you could even get water or sewer.
There are steps, but yeah. I mean, I don't want to broadcast this,
but
it's known by the people who do it, how the mechanism
tricks
to get
the
around.
Trade. Yeah. So certainly there are exceptions, and there are all kinds of funny
sure.
situations that you have to face, and we don't need to get into any of that. The basic idea here is the rule is that we don't go scouting, and we're not police on patrol trying to dig up dirt. Instead, we are a very responsible code enforcement staff here, follows up to ensure that complaints by citizens are handled responsibly.
One other piece to this that we try to do proactively is we work with a partner called Community Mediation Services. And the reason we will offer free mediation. This is my eighth year of dealing with neighbors who do not like each other. And so what I try to do is, instead of going, if they call here first and they haven't gone to code enforcement, is to ask them if they've tried to mediate the situation or if they're comfortable talking to their neighbor one more time. Because in my experience, once you call code enforcement, it just escalates and it deteriorates and ruins the relationship usually permanently. And so I tell people that, and I say, you know, I can go down and we can start a code enforcement case, but have you tried talking to the neighbor one last time, and would you be open to mediation? Because once you go down the code enforcement route, usually it just goes that route.
You're burning the bridge.
Yeah. So what's that guy doing with that house, the one that bought it?
You also, I can take you out and show it to you, see if you want to buy it.
What's that new owner doing?
Huh? He's staying in Lake Oswego, and the house is sitting there.
I'd probably get a good deal then, huh?
Yeah, he doesn't want to come over there. I think he's afraid he'll get caught, and he'll end up having to upgrade everything.
So, welcome, Mr. Commissioner, to the Frustration Relief Department. We hear from citizens.
Right. Any other questions on enforcement? Thank you, Marty.
Thank you.
Anything else
for me
before I try to...
I just want to say thank you. You have a very interactive map that shows where the permits are out there, and I'm going to highlight that on my Facebook page. Well done. That was a good initiative.
Susan Ellinger and Ken Pro collaborated on that. Very, very cool.
You haven't seen it yet. It's fancy schmancy. Good work.
Thank you.
All right. Back up to 1.1.
No more jumping the line. As you know, commissioners, at our retreat in January, I think it was January, we went over the list of board assignments of the various advisory commissions and boards and whatnot that you serve on. And then Commissioner Stewart, after we got this all settled, decided to move to the City of Ridgefield city manager job. And so now that we have Commissioner Barnes on the commission, it's probably time that we look at these. And I think Commissioner Mador took the liberty of going through this.
Preferences and recommendations, rather than just preferences and recommendations.
And he's made a number of suggestions. And Philly, this one's not
Mine. Welcome to your new full-time, part-time job.
Could be worse to be a legislator and have a full-time job with part-time pay.
Yeah.
I've been that route.
Actually, it's amazing all the different roles we have an opportunity to do. So Ed, where it says board, that means all three of us sit on those. That's just a given. That's a purple.
Okay, so these pages aren't numbered, but let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. On the back side of page 5.
Actually, you skipped one, didn't you? This one here.
Yeah, well, it was marked up and then it was scratched out. So
actually, which one are you on? We're just going in numeric order here.
Okay.
Who
scratched this out?
Well, I don't know. WASAC, did you want? I've already been sitting on that.
Yeah.
You want me to continue that?
Yeah, you were in line for legislation.
Yeah, if you remember back in December,
I sat on the board.
Yeah.
The long run. Yeah. So yeah. Okay. So.
Okay. And then continuing.
Okay. So then, on the back of page 5.
Well, let's just
Council for the Homeless Board.
Okay, they see it there.
Commissioner Mador is recommending that Commissioner Barnes take that one.
And what that is in fact, you heard from Andy this morning. What's his last name?
Andy Silver was here.
Yeah, he was a representative from the Council for the Homeless, a very good, very active resource to help those individuals that need housing. And help them in doing for very practical ways. That's a great board to sit on.
That okay? Okay. It looks like the next one, the Disability Board. I see either keep it with Commissioner Mador or Commissioner Barnes if you're interested in that. I think Commissioner Mador would be willing to let you have it.
Let me tell you about that. In fact, I think you would probably very much like that. And it's they meet right here in room 511 on the fifth floor. And what that is the meetings last really long. They're at least 5 to 6 minutes.
Can I have that one?
And sometimes they go all the way up to 10 or 12. But
so
what
who,
that What that is, it's this one up here, the purple.
Yeah, but you got we got one meeting at 4 o'clock, and one meeting at 1:15 to 1:45 on the same day.
And this is only here in the building, and it only lasts a few minutes.
Okay, and this one here is someplace else. The council for the homeless.
Yeah, and that's just a few miles away.
Okay, all right, okay.
Yeah. So what the disability board is. The retirees of the for law enforcement, well, emergency responders, that have if they retire and they have they all have benefits, okay. And medical benefits in particular, some have housing benefits, hearing aid benefits, that kind of thing. And there's a process that's defined by state law that says there needs to be a little governing board that approves each one of those requests for benefits, and so there you get to see specifically what each person, what their medical costs are for subscriptions or housing costs or hearing aids, and you just look at each one of those, and by that time they're already screened. So it's a formality process. We've always approved them all because they do qualify.
Okay.
So this will help you be able to have an active voice in approving benefits for retired emergency responders. It's a good board. So you want that one, Commissioner?
He's checking Lines? His calendar. Is that okay, Commissioner Lyons? Okay. Okay, then there's two more on the next page.
The bottom of the
Southwest Washington Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Yep. And what that is, this is another one for potentially Commissioner Barnes. We're trying to get you plugged in. They meet at the Hilton Hotel. And this is hotels, a number of them have enrolled themselves into this organization that they pay a certain amount of their revenue to this tourism fund, and then this board decides what they're going to do with that to promote tourism within Clark County and Vancouver City.
Is it the PFT board?
No.
No, this is just for the expenditures of the funds from the hotels that have...
Yeah, $2 per room per night.
I helped create that.
Oh, well.
It's a marketing organization.
You did, well.
On the PFD.
It all comes full circle.
I sat on the PFD board and made the motion to build the Hilton Hotel.
Oh.
And also make sure that it said Vancouver Convention Center, not the Hilton Convention Center.
Oh, okay.
That building...
Well, I assume then you would prefer that.
Well, I know that's fine.
Okay.
And by extension, if you're a member of the board instead of Commissioner Medora, then you would also serve on the executive board, which is the one down below at the bottom.
Oh, both of them, yeah.
Okay. So by agreeing to one, Commissioner Barnes, you're agreeing to the other.
It's the same meeting, though.
No, it's a smaller group.
Okay, but it doesn't... It doesn't say what date they meet on.
The executive board is very rare.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's a pretty well-run organization, so those executive types don't have a lot to do. What is this? Oh, that one's gone. Yeah, we stopped paying the bill for that one. Okay, then on the next page, Workforce Development Council. Commissioner Barnes, I mentioned that to you before, and you thought you would really enjoy that because it has to do with...
Jobs
and people.
Mm-hmm. And there's two parts to that. There's quarterly and monthly. And the monthly, you get to normally eat at a restaurant and with two other fellow commissioners and the executive director, and you pick out what you want to eat as you do some simple business.
And which restaurant you meet in?
Normally up by the, sometimes it's actually the Oak Tree.
Oak Tree.
Uh-huh. It says monthly and monthly. Is this quarterly and this is monthly?
It was.
This says quarterly and monthly, and that both of these are, or this is quarterly.
The executive is quarterly, normally.
Executive board, and then they have a WDC executive board and a WDC board. So there are three bodies, actually.
I can give you clarify that later for you, because that took me a month to figure it out.
Okay.
But I did finally figure it out.
Okay. But you're up for that.
Fine.
Okay. Goodness, there's a lot of EBs on here.
You don't know anybody who would want to sit on the Columbia River Economic Development Council, do you?
Okay. That's good.
Well, I assume that you're going to sign
you're
up.
You're okay
that
with that one. I take
another
it.
One, Steve Torres.
Make sure you're
that second
that
Thursday.
Your
second Thursdays are going to be crazy because you've got a 7 o'clock in the morning with the Columbia River Economic Development. Then you have
7:30, 4 o'clock.
Then you have 2 in the afternoon.
Well, I already know he's the early riser. He's here early. That's good.
Knock them all out one day.
There you go.
I'd be way through it. Do it all one day.
Okay, and then there's the board of directors and the executive committee, so there are two. So if you take one, you take the other.
And
this is third Thursday every other month. Okay?
And the... well, Anna, I've got one here down that one. It says Local Health Boards Alliance. Oh, that's the one. That's the new one.
Yeah, and you mentioned to me that because you're on the RSN and all of the health boards, you thought
yeah. I'd like to sign up for that.
Yeah, that makes
that's
sense.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So we're on the local health board.
Yeah, we're going to have to count these up when we're done and make sure that Ed isn't stuck with a lion's share.
Oh, I got it. I know. I wonder, how in the world did you get so light there?
He's a chair. He gets tired taking care of you two.
I got all the chairman stuff to go to.
Okay. Then there are two more.
In WASAC, that's, again, that's what I already was saying.
Yep,
is that okay?
Well, you were the alternate, and so when...
What was that?
WASAC. The Legislative Steering Committee.
Yeah, you are.
You were the alternate, so you automatically get that one.
Okay.
Oh, it says Tom was, Commissioner Mielke was the alternate. But.
And Mr. Transportation Commissioner. We have Metropolitan Policy Advisory Committee and Policy Joint Advisory Committee on Transportation, JPAC. I'm thinking.
I'll be going to that in the morning.
Yep.
Okay,
so
wait, that's 7:30 a.m. second Thursday of the month. We just signed him up for...
Which Thursday?
Second Thursday. We just signed him up for, was it Columbia River?
Economic Development.
Is that the conflict?
Okay, that's...
Yeah, that will be a conflict one.
Where the heck is this?
7 a.m. for CRDC on second Thursday.
Shoot. Where the heck did it go?
Oh, no, it's the third Thursday for Columbia River, so it's okay.
Oh, great. Okay.
Well, no, here's Columbia River Executive Committee, second Thursday of the month at 7 a.m.
Oh, you're right. The actual board meeting is the same day, 7 a.m.
So this is 7:30 a.m. on the second Thursday, so he can't be on both of those.
But Steve was on both of them before, right?
Well, but he can't go to – he can't be at one place at 7 a.m. and another place at 7:30.
What did Steve do?
Steve
told
me he never went to
him. Oh, attend every other one, I guess.
Really?
That's what he told me.
What do you do?
He never went to him. That's just a huge, huge board.
It is a monstrous board. Both of these are in Portland.
That's fine. We'll work it out.
Pick your priority.
Okay, so you'll take them, and then we'll just rely on you to sort it out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and another thing, too, is we can, if there's something important, you can always find someone in transportation on staff that can be an alternate and go and get the information for you.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the last one is the Law and Justice Council for Clark County. When Bill Barron left, he slapped Axel with the responsibility for that one.
Yeah.
But then there's a county commissioner as the alternate. And who was that? Was that Steve Stewart?
It was Steve, yeah.
He said county administrator.
Well,
Nice try. Yeah.
Well, tell us about that.
And Clark County Commissioner on the board. So this is, and it's a fun board. We meet in the mornings. We try to set up an agenda item that's related to law and justice. That's always kind of an item that touches all the different organizations that show up, because we have state patrol that show up, sheriff. We've got fire, we've got the prosecuting attorneys, we've got the defense attorneys, judges, so, everybody kind of comes together and we talk about things that are happening with the local criminal justice system that might be important, so.
I would volunteer for that, but I have CJC that morning.
Okay.
My Thursday's already filled up.
Yeah, that's another second Thursday.
Yeah, and it's a second Thursday.
Who planned all these second Thursdays?
Holy cow.
You don't go home at 5 o'clock.
So
how long do the meetings last?
An hour. They're an hour.
Yeah, we try to just go from 8 to 9 a.m. And like I said, we just try to come up, we have one topic, so, you know, the region system or the new 911 radio system, those kind of things that are going to hit the region and all these agencies. We usually do an overview, have a presentation, then we do a round table, and then we get out of there.
What kind of report back can you do to the board?
Well, we have minutes that are taken, and then that's about it. We have minutes, and we keep a record of it that way.
Can you provide the board with those minutes?
They go on the grid, don't they?
So. I don't know. What, Tina and I have them.
On the grid.
Yeah. We're going to make sure she gets that much.
Yes. Yeah, we'll revise this document to reflect what you've agreed to today. And then we'll make sure that Lene gets these meetings on your schedule.
And I'm thinking that.
And he was in the room still.
I know it. This is quite unusual.
So are you signing up to be the alternate?
I'm looking to see if I have any conflicts if I sign
time-wise?
Up for it. It looks like I'm good.
What all do we put on the grid? Do we put every one of these boards, meetings, commissions, and committee minutes and everything on the grid?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Or if they have their own website, we point to theirs. So, I can...
Why don't you have this on computer on a chart so you could look and exactly see it all?
That'd be too easy, Paul.
I mean, the computer savvy.
No, he is.
Actually, we're doing that with all of the advisory committees, all of the advisory boards.
You should have one paper where everything is all on and everybody knows.
It's called a website. But yeah, I understand what your point. At a glance, we want to be able to get to the kind of associated information and see the date and who's assigned it, where's that, where the meetings are, all those things. And yep, let's do that, Mark. See what we can do to organize these. Well, I know that we, at this point, all we're doing is on our county website, we have for each commissioner a list of the different boards that we all participate on. But it would be good for us to be able to have this published somewhere online as well so that they can get the big picture of all of them together and the dates when they meet, that kind of thing.
The Law and Justice Council is on here on the grid. And no, it's not on the grid. It's under advisory boards.
Oh, it is.
It is. It has the members, the meetings. Who to contact.
So I think these are really boards, and the boards consist of advisory boards and governing boards, and so that would be the one place to put these.
The only concern I have about that, Commissioner, is that are all of these governing boards, they're not all open to the public. So if you throw them up there with times and meeting dates, the public will think that they are able to attend.
I think probably 90-95% might be open to public.
Actually, I think they are.
Then they should.
These are.
We should make a note of that. Then on.
Yeah.
Whether they're open to the public or not open to the public.
And that would be on our on that page that we're just now refining.
Well, I'd like to create. This is a different animal than advisory boards
it's
that
true.
Advise you.
It's true.
These are boards that you're a member of,
mm-hmm.
And you're providing your insight to a different
so really
to a
boards.
different body. Yeah. So. Yeah, so we'll have
a... you could take that whole template
and reproduce it with this information.
Yep.
Were you interested in attending that meeting? Is that what you're...
Yes, yeah. So you can sign me up as an alternate, and you can be the lead on it, and always let me know ahead of time, because very likely I'll be jumping into, if I'm available, I normally am, jumping in to be the lead.
Yep.
In fact, let's swap it around. You be the alternate, I'll be the lead.
Okay.
Because this is all... Really good
well,
stuff.
Just to talk about.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, so when you, Commissioner, when you say you take the lead,
my name in the box.
If you can't make it.
Yeah, that's fine. But I.
You're the orchestrator.
I find the topics and.
Oh really?
And I mean, I lead the meeting.
Oh, you do.
The discussion and find the topics. If you want to do that, I'm totally okay with that. I just want to know what you're signing up for.
Well, tell you what. That sounds like it's working really well. Why don't we leave you there, and I will and sign me up as an alternate, and we'll normally buddy up, and
okay.
I'll normally go with you.
Okay.
So this is Axel and me, David. Okay.
Done with that.
Got it all done. We're good.
Okay. Let's go.
Axel.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
sure. We've been pretty informal.
We have this taped. Are any of these other board meetings taped?
They're
not our boards. We just set on them.
The boards that we are the controllers of, if it says board and we're there, they're recorded either with CBTV or with audio, whether it be a work session, whatever. These other boards that we sit on, there's a whole list of them. They are their own entities. They're different jurisdictions, and they're in control of those meetings. Normally, an example, the RSN, they are CBTV covered. The Southwest Washington Aging Disabilities, they're not recorded either way, but they have their published minutes on their website.
And they're open to the public.
And
RTC, JPEG, all of them are all televised.
RTC is CBTV, so a number of them are. The ones I'm not aware of any that are so far within that ought to be that are not, but I'm open to see if we go through the list here, if there be some way we can suggest an improvement.
Okay, NACO.
So NACO has contacted us. NACO, for those that don't know, is our National Association of Counties. It's much like the Washington State Association of Counties. We pay dues to them, just like we pay dues to the State Association. And much like the State Association, they elect officers for the National Association as well as a legislative and policy agenda each year. That's coming up rapidly. They're having their 79th annual conference from July 11th, my birthday, through July 14th.
July 11th?
So, yes.
That's your birthday?
7-11.
Hey.
So, it looks...
7-17.
So, their question to us, or what we need to decide, I suppose, is in order to be a voting member or to have votes cast at NACO for our county and ultimately for our state, you have to not only have your dues paid, which we have paid our dues to NACO this year, but you have to have a registered participant at the conference or someone registered for the conference or pay the registration fee at the conference and have... In our case, we could have WASAC vote for us or WASAC's chairman. The bottom line is we need to decide if we want to pay for a conference registration so that our roughly 15 votes would be counted at the national conference for officers of the national organization and that legislative and policy slate. It looks like to register, if we can still do it in advance, it's $540. If we can't, it's $650. If you want to send someone or some persons to this, you know, obviously then you have to cover their airfare and their time in a hotel there. You can assign basically either the chair of the board or, well, pretty much the chair of the board would have to sign off on whoever the delegate would be that would have the voting rights. You can assign that to anybody, any county official or appointee that you want to send to vote on your behalf, or you can assign it to your state association on your behalf. So this
is for the conference itself, not for membership.
Correct. We have already paid our dues for the year, so we are members.
Depending upon what we paid, we have one, two, or three votes.
Well, you can have up to like 121 votes. The votes are based on your dues paid. So we paid just over $7,000 in dues based on our size of our county. So I think if my math's right, that gives us around 15 votes.
That's in Louisiana in July. Welcome to humidity.
I've been to Louisiana in July.
It's a little hot. I'm going to see family. I have a wedding up here on the 12th.
I'm interested. Let me check with my wife because on trips like this, I like to pay her way for us to be able to get away and. So it's not time away, it's a time together. So I'll get back with you on that.
Where do you want Cindy, man?
Yeah, otherwise, Ed, it's your chance. Change the world.
No, I think I have a convention coming up in that same month.
Oh, okay. So,
okay. So
we may or may not make it.
I'll check.
So if he doesn't go... WASAC goes in.
You can do two things.
They do our proxy.
You can agree to sign off and send someone else on staff, or you can agree to pay the registration fee, and sign off so that WASAC, as our state representative, can vote with our block of votes. So,
can we designate another commissioner somewhere in the state to vote in that place?
That's a good point. You can also give your votes to another county that's sending someone.
What if another county official like Peter Van Nortwick or Doug Lasher attend?
You could assign some other county official also.
Who do you want to get on right here?
Actually, I'm going to do some homework because as WASAC, the Washington version of this, you develop networks of people, good people.
You can have some good Cajun food, too.
Yeah. Okay. So I will check on that.
I used to go to Washita. Yeah,
next subject. Surface mining and overlay.
Okay. As you know, that we've had a lot of work done on surface mining overlay, a lot of testimony, the joint meeting with the Planning Commission and the Board of Commissioners, and the hearing, the evening hearing on, what was it, the 4th? No.
Week before that.
3rd.
Not 3.
Yeah, the 3-hour hearing.
What meeting did you go to? The one I went to was longer.
Six? No, it was 4 hours. Yeah. Started at 6, and we got out at 10.
10:30.
That meeting ended without a decision, and I know staff is really anxious to get another hearing.
That's nice. I'm glad staff.
Another hearing scheduled. I know Commissioner Madour is very interested in scheduling another hearing.
I have completed half of my research. But I think we could probably schedule it out because I think we have to give it at least 2 weeks.
Yes.
So I'd like to schedule it out when you can, but not on an evening meeting.
Commissioner, discussion on that?
I mentioned that before.
Commissioner Barnes, a chance to talk.
I have requests from both the contractor and DNR people and the citizens up there to go through and have a conversation with them. And I had one conversation with DNR today, but I want to go up and take a better look at it. And I don't want to be, like I told you guys, I'll make sure that whatever I do is
informed.
We're not ready yet then.
Right.
That's really very good because you want to hear all parties, all sides. Right. Between now, what we're deciding on now is when the meeting is so you can get enough notice. And then between now and then, you have the times, the days to be able to schedule and do our homework. So when it arrives, we've done our homework. We're prepared.
So is 1 July too soon?
What day is that on?
That's Tuesday. The first Tuesday of the month.
I don't want that day.
Okay.
Well,
understand, sir.
I think I have that with Chairman. In the bylaws, I think I have that choice.
Well, that would be...
What do you got, Ed?
That would be the 7th.
The 1st.
1st. In July. Mm-hmm. July 1st, Tuesday, July 1st.
In the evening, 6 o'clock. Okay. And here's just my thoughts on it, is that I know there have been a number of evening meetings, and we've been very accommodating because there's so many neighbors that work during the day that have diligently been there each time. And if we have it during the day, either we say that they cannot attend because they're going to be at work, or at the evening, then they can be there. And hopefully one last meeting will be able to make a decision on it and get her done. So I'm thinking that it would be the most accommodating to the citizens that would be most affected by this, to go ahead and between now and the 1st of July, have the evening meeting to wrap it up, and hopefully we'll be able to make a decision then. And that gives sufficient time between now and then, because this is, what, the 11th?
We've had, and that would be our 8th meeting, and of the 8 meetings, we've had at least 5 or 6 counting the Planning Commission meetings that are in the evening, where they had all those evening meetings to testify. If there was something different than I expected, I would probably agree to that, but I don't think you're going to hear anything different than you've heard, than we haven't heard 7 times before. And I'm with you. I'd like to get it done, but I don't see the need to go through that, to put our staff through that. And 1 week, we delay things 1 week repeatedly to get things done. So, Anthony has more things. I have two more things. Have you done your homework on number three and number five? That was the other two questions that came up.
So July 1st is the next
evening meeting.
Evening meeting. So, and that meeting you're proposing to finish off the hearing of people that haven't had a chance to talk before.
Yeah, and eight times that, before, yeah.
That haven't talked
so
before.
So what I'm proposing is that we do it the following week.
Stuff or some kind of ground rules to where you're not listing the same thing over and over and over. That, so.
Yeah, that's really the process is up to the chairman as to the how are you going to hear, what kind of testimony you're going to hear.
If you make a rule that if you ever testify before, you can't testify again, we'll do it. But my point is, we've heard them seven times say the same thing.
Well, they must be getting better every time. Yeah. Practice makes perfect.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with the July 1st night meeting. I don't have really.
You,
have
you don't mind giving up your union meeting? I kind of object giving up my evening to hear the same thing over again. I respect having the people hear it. I respect taking action on it, but I don't see the need to do that.
So you're saying wait till the 12th then?
7th, or the 8th. The following week, instead of the first, next week.
Oh, okay. All right.
It'll be a 10 o'clock meeting. They give you one, and they give us 3 weeks.
Well,
to do the homework and the research that we have to do, and I still have to do. I have another meeting I told Ms. Hansen I'd do, and also I have research to do on number three and number five.
There may be the number three, the number five, that we can potentially get everything done minus those and address those separately so that we can allow this community to move on. Because one of the observations that I had when I was out there is that especially in 12 and 13 and I think in 14 as well, there are a number of buildable lots out there. And a number of for sale signs for those buildable lots to for that growing community and that active real estate market out there. And this is prime season for people to be able to purchase a lot, start making plans and building their homes. And if you've got a lot that's in an area that is being considered to add a new mining extraction and overlay, then it's a high risk in their eyes because they don't know which way we're going to go on these decisions. So in reality, I feel like we're holding up the real estate market the more we sit on this and delay our decision. I would rather have our community move forward and not stand in the way of the real estate market in the prime season.
Well, even though you say here. That, David, they got all these lots up there for sale. How many of them actually are permitted? Ready to go? Do we know how many that have permits on them to build houses on them currently?
Well, I expect if they still have for sale signs, none of them do. What I mean to say is that when I say permitted, that they're already platted, a saleable lot.
Yeah,
but that none of those processes are going to start until after they buy the lot. Then they can start it.
And the sewer, water?
They're all on wells, and I think they're all on septic.
They all have to do their own wells. They all have to do their own septics. So
all right, well, I'll go talk to these three groups of people. And
Well, if we were to consider the 1st or the 8th, what do we have when it comes to options of noticing?
Okay.
Is the 1st too late if we don't make a decision today?
No, at the risk of inflaming a commissioner, I will confess that I noticed the hearing for the 1st in the event that the board decided they wanted to have the hearing on the 1st. Because if we waited until today, yeah. We missed the cutoff with the Columbian and wouldn't have enough notice time. So I can always scrub the notice with no prejudice.
At that board meeting, we said we'll schedule it later.
Exactly, exactly. So but
prematurely went and did that.
But I can withdraw the notice.
I think we should.
But I think we need a majority. Did you find it in there? Where it?
It's not in here. It says the chair will preside over all meetings of the board. So.
Yeah.
And I think Ed is better than I am. That we have more work to do, but I think I can do my work in 3 weeks. I don't know what you feel about that. Or do you want to wait and come back next week and decide?
I would just assume to get it done, get it out. Not if everybody's here one way or the other.
I think, Commissioner Mielke makes a good point that if we have another evening hearing and we have 120 people sign up, 119 of them are going to say pretty much what we've already heard.
Well, that's what I brought up.
Fast trucks, shaking ground when they blow the dynamite, et cetera, et cetera. So there likely won't be any new information from the residents on Livingston Mountain in an evening hearing, but yet it'll take 3 hours for everybody to repeat what they've already said.
The other point, the SMO is one document, and to do one, to leave out the other two for maybe saving a week when you could just wait 1 week and complete number 3, number 5, and number 14. By then, I think that we'd have have our homework done a lot better. It's been complicated. One thing we notice as we have these meetings, that everybody wants us to make a decision, but every time we have a meeting, something new comes up that was never brought up before.
Well, the gentleman that talked about Area 5.
Number 5 and number 3. Yeah. Well, and then they booed down the guy who had the opposite opinion, who was there giving information. We never did find out how deep the existing mine's going to go. One thing I do notice is that the mine that's there is less than half mined.
Yeah.
It's going to be there for 20 years. And so these people up there looking at I'm not saying no less than 20 years because I've been up there since 1947. They mined it for a while, then they didn't mine it. They're back mining it right now. It could be more than 20 years. So they're not going to change anything that's not already there.
What you're saying, Tom, is if there's enough gravel there or rock to last another 20 years,
at least.
If the board decided not to increase 12, 13, and 14 decide to go against that, it basically wouldn't hurt the gravel company one way or other?
Not for 20 years. We come back and address this every 3 to 7 years. We could come back and redesignate it another time.
I don't know. You got new life here. They say that new commissioners live a lot longer because you're going to college again.
Now you find out how can we do that invocation every day.
I got to get on the stick then and get those three people lined up.
So first or eighth?
Eighth.
I would say the eighth.
Well, that's your two votes.
Okay, eighth it is.
All right, moving on. Money saving.
Okay, I think I confused some people in the county directors. Like, what the heck is that?
Money saving policy.
Yeah,
we like those policies.
Right. I want to use one specific example that's under consideration right now. Laura Peterson, who oversees the telecom function here at the county. She is looking to create a bring-your-own-device policy. For example, right now, that phone is costing the county between $50 and $60 a month for phone service and for data. So I can get email and I can do research on the internet or what, during meetings or what have you. If I turn that phone in, the county saves that $55, and I have a phone in my office, it's mine. And if I agree to use my personal phone for county business, then the county would pay me a $25 stipend to help defray the cost of that phone. The county would save $30. Now, if we have 500 of these and every person decides to do that, we could save some serious money. Well, not serious, but thousands of dollars. So I asked Chris Horn, do I have the authority to approve a policy like that where we give employees a small stipend in return for something, and
the option.
And he recommended that I run that past the board. Whenever an idea like that pops up and it makes good business sense and it saves money, will you give me the authority to move those policies forward, approve them, and implement them, or do I need to bring small money-saving things like this to the board in a formal way to gain your approval?
I like the idea of empowering our administrator to be able to save money and give you the creativity and the freedom to do that.
Okay, and whenever we implement a policy of this sort, I will advise you in one forum or another that mm-hmm. we have done something.
So how many people use their phone for business? We have 1,600 employees.
I don't have the answer to that question at the moment, sir. But
so we... Maybe 50 or 100.
Well, you can advertise out.
I don't know, but I guarantee you, if you offer to pay a small stipend, $25, more people will trade their county phones in for that stipend.
So how many county phones do we have?
I'd have to get you a count.
Okay. So I have no problem replacing the county phones with those individuals. I don't want to do a blanket thing.
No.
So you're going to have to put some site work on it.
Currently, before a county employee can get a county phone, they have to make the business case and that they need a phone.
And they're going to have to understand that their personal phone is subject to public disclosure.
Exactly.
Laws.
Yeah. When they sign the agreement,
they have to understand that.
That statement will be in there.
Sounds good.
Okay, so thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
All right. Commissioner reports. David.
Let's see what I got here. Ed, Commissioner Barnes, you can go first. I'm sorting out, see if I have anything.
Do you have anything, Ed, that you'd like to talk about, a question, or
no, just
move forward? We always give do-overs, too. So if we start off around the table, you think of something, we welcome it.
Yeah, I don't see anything in here.
Okay.
So I don't have anything.
I'll go ahead and go. One of these things has to do with Axel. Quiet Zone with the Neighborhood Association. Neighborhood, get back with you.
Yeah, well, I'm working with the neighbors, so basically what we took away last week was... stop spending. We've got the baseline estimates. It's going in this phase to be turned over to the neighbors, and they need to start walking and knocking and making phone calls and connecting. And if that turns into a petition of some kind, so be it. But they need to get the neighborhood on board with.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So that communication.
Corey, we already talked about Corey. Animal control and laptop.
Yeah, I have a meeting scheduled with animal control and public health.
Great.
So that we can do the Vulcan mind meld.
that public health, that fellow who already was successful in the iPads or whatever he was using, was it?
Yes, they have implemented.
They look really good.
They've implemented a number of smaller things, but they have bigger plans. They've hired the informaticist that you authorized, and he's digging in with both hands.
To get more miles out of it, yeah. Great.
But they've already realized some efficiencies.
Fabulous.
So we'll do that Vulcan mind melt thing. And
working smarter. That's good.
And Dolly Building with the Youth Commission.
Yeah, I'm going to lean back and let you look at Axel on that.
We still need to go visit.
Axel and I... I'm going to go over there and see the living room still full of furniture and stuff. So, and the other thing is that we were talking about it, and they said, well, the upstairs is full of people. And I thought that we had two employees and volunteers there, but that led me to believe that we could have 9 employees there. Is that right? Or more.
Yeah. Where? Yeah, the upstairs is surprisingly large and full of folks, so that's kind of why we just need to go over there and have Elizabeth or Dee Dee or somebody walk us around and show us exactly how each part of that building's used and for what.
Yeah.
And then we can get an idea also of how much time a day is it used.
Yeah.
You know, is it all day or just for an hour? I don't know.
Maybe there's other partners there, I think.
This sounds like a one-on-one between you guys, because...
We just have to find time to do it. We were going to do this last
week. We were going to try to run with them.
The actual schedule was full.
Yeah, that was.
Okay. We'll do that. And I think we have, I turned in my six names for interviews for the analyst position.
I thought you were the last one, so Tina must have binders now. I know.
I was down to six names.
I didn't know you had Commissioner Mielke, so that that should be. So now we're gonna have to come up with the next step, which will be taking those names and you three.
Yes.
I think we can probably have a short executive session or something where, because you're gonna have to talk about who you want to interview, because you won't all have the same names.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have that discussion about employee.
I was hoping to get down to six names.
Right.
And then interview six
people. But if you pick six and Commissioner Barnes picks a different six, and Commissioner
Barnes. I think you'll need to have.
We've come a long way. We've come from 108 applications.
That was Joe Walsh's job. How many did we have?
We had about 80.
80.
So how many do we have now that actually have?
What was in the binder?
We had 16 in the binder, and you each submitted maybe six. So
six different ones? I'd like to know.
Well,
because there's surely
the
overlap.
I haven't seen them
yet. He doesn't know yet.
Let's find out what the total count is, because some of those are overlapped.
Yeah, that's the next step.
And so, the next step will be you guys talking about qualifications.
Well,
and passion.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we, you turn in your names? Then why don't you pass the notebooks back to us so we can see how many votes each one got, and then we can do a little extra homework in preparation for it, and then we can sit down, we can schedule and have a executive session.
Okay. Maybe do a little spreadsheet.
I'll just have Tina or somebody.
We'll do it.
What
was the criteria now for passing those back? Are you going to pass them back the names of everybody that got two votes?
No, everyone who got a vote or more.
One vote or more.
For interviewing.
Okay.
We're looking for six people referred for interview.
Because if all three pick one person, that's a pretty strong endorsement.
Yeah.
If one picked a person, that's not a strong endorsement.
Right.
And so if you're trying to get down to six, you pick the threes and the twos before you go to the ones.
And if all three of us pick, four votes, they say, okay, who voted twice?
That's all I have. Axel,
okay. Vacancy. Steph.
I'm sorry, you're last.
I got two things. Planning Commission. We went out for. You'll remember, Planning Commissioner Jim Gizzi stepped down. His term ends in December, so
we
need December of 2017. So we'll need to fill that term for a few years here. Oh. And Jennifer put it out for notice to take applications. So the question for you all is, in the period of time she put it out, we only received two applications.
This kind of explains something, Axel. I've gotten maybe three people recommending somebody, and I didn't know what they were.
Okay.
I thought we had a full board, but I didn't know.
Nope. We've got two. We only got two applications in. Devin Jackson, who is an engineer here locally, and Rex Buchanan. Who it looks like works in the steel construction.
One position?
Only one position, and it would fill that term. So that was why Jennifer wanted me to bring it, is with two applicants, do you want to review these and make a decision, or try to make a decision, or do you want her to put it back out and try to field some more?
Well, how is the word getting out?
Advertising the paper. There's a press release.
Yeah, press release.
It looks like
a press release that goes to where?
Puts out a press release.
We have the advisory board website. Is it on there as well? The grid? It should be.
Yeah.
I have the answer to that. There's the same process for everything. There's a press release. It goes on the website. There's a huge email list that it goes out to. It goes in the newspaper.
We are covering the bases
very
well.
Covered.
So we've already done it once, and that sounds like
we
followed process.
1 week or 2 weeks?
2 weeks. How long ago? You want to take a look
May
at these
15th,
two?
So
how long did it? What did it have?
The date this went out was May 15th, so it was sometime between May and then.
Now, did that go in the reflector as well to cover all the north part of the county?
I doubt it.
I don't know.
The press release goes out.
Yes.
Everybody gets
a
press
release.
Great.
Whether they choose to publish it.
I would like to see the two.
Well,
how about you guys? Do you want to go back out? It's been May 15th. That was a month ago.
It could be super qualified people, those two.
You just
said be crazy to do the job. That's a tough job.
You just said something makes
so
me wonder.
So don't print that.
We send a press release, but they might not print it. That's not the same as getting the word out in the newspaper. I would think.
It's up to the newspaper to publish what they believe is newsworthy.
Okay, well, I'd like to step it to make sure that we actually get the word out on this. And maybe we're not just looking for give us a favor, freebie, somehow find a spot to put this free in the paper. Instead, we would actually pay to put it in the Reflector, at least. Because the Columbians already did it for Goodwill.
Are you advocating, Commissioner, for that for the Planning Commission Advisory Board only,
We're talking about one right now.
Actually, for now, I'd like to just to talk about the Planning Commission right now. We can leave that other for another conversation. I would say, if the Reflector did not publish it, we have people find out yes or no they did. If they did, then we would make sure we do actually publish it out there. If they did publish it, then we're good. We've got the word out.
Are you interested in looking at the two applications that sent in?
Well, depending on how this goes. If the word did not get out to most of the county, then we need to get the word out. And if it did, we're ready to go. With following the normal process, you know, give us the, what the drill is.
Okay, so if it was in the Reflector, we're good. If it wasn't, we're going to go back out.
So I have a question. Yeah. Isn't it a public service? And normally it doesn't cost us anything.
Correct.
If they publish it.
Well, or they can make a story out of it themselves. They don't have to publish it.
Or we could pay to put it in the... No, not
but if you start doing that, you're going to have to do it all the time for everything.
Well, I'm not trying to establish precedent. This is an important, really important board.
Right.
And we want to make sure that the community knows there's an opportunity to have to play a role in this board. And if we haven't done that, if it didn't happen, let's make it happen before we close the door, is what I'm saying.
Well, these applications that you just went through that we're just talking about, you probably use the same process to get 60 applicants for that job that you're going to.
Well, those jobs are paid. These are volunteer.
Well, I know that. I understand that. But you know, like I say, if it goes in the Reflector and it's the publication of the commission, then, you know, I'd say who then, once you get the two applications, that if you can set it out and you get four, is it going to come back to the commission? We're going to say...
We always go through the process. The process includes first make sure we get the word out to a sufficient degree, and that's what's in question here. And then we each get notebooks with the applicants that came through. We select which one we want to interview. We interview, make a choice.
I just want to clarify here. It's not unusual for the Jennifer to come back with a request from the board. Do you want to renotice this? Sometimes you just don't get much of a response. Mm-hmm. And I think the commissioner's point is that this is an extremely important board, as we've learned from the recent surface mining issues. So maybe just renotice it.
Well, go beyond that,
and now we're going to put a paid advertisement in the Reflector.
If necessary.
Or go back and ask them to put that.
We take that press release and rework it to say that the board has extended the deadline apply, and then just send it out again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
look at the Reflector and see how
big. Then we'll call the Reflector editor and ask him to put it in there.
Big a piece the Reflector put it in there to start with.
Otherwise,
I can call him up. We just sent a press release out. Since you're going to be our paper of record on 1 July, would you mind?
Yeah. Public notices from us is very important.
Yeah. Okay. So the bottom line. The bottom line on this is, yes, the normal process would be to community service, ask the papers to be able to notice it. This is such an important one that if they did not pick it up, whatever steps we need to do to make sure that the word does get out, we take, so that we don't end up with people making decisions and the community says, we didn't know there was an opening.
They're going to publish it for free, and if they don't, we'll pay them.
We already agree on
that. He's the man that gets her done.
Anyway, okay.
Because I know Commissioner Mielke wants to move on.
Axel.
Thanks.
This can probably hold to next week for the most part, but we are holding that Portland State Institute invoice, and you asked me to work with Jeff Swanson to see if we utilize them.
We can't find anything to justify the payment tomorrow.
Jeff said that community planning does use them. I went down to community planning and I asked. And it does turn out, I think, that they in some way do use them, but I asked for specifics, so
yeah.
If I get specifics, I'll bring that to you.
What were we paying them? $5,000?
It's dead. I would just let it go.
Is it worth what
it's
we're paying?
It's $4,100.
No, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, if we were to do that, we'd go to WSU.
Okay, so don't pay.
No.
Yeah, they're on this side of the river.
They didn't even list this as a partner. Right.
Are we going to notify them in some way, Mark?
I would draft a memo indicating that we're going to, as politely as you can, that we're terminating the relationship.
Okay.
Anything else for Axel?
That's it.
Ed Barnes.
At the last meeting, we had a discussion in here about with our lobbyists for the county, mm-hmm. and that, and we. I brought up the fact that we talked about the legislation that had to do with whether the State Department of Transportation owed $300,000 money and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I am still concerned that I want to see something, like I told you guys, I want to see something from the Department of Transportation saying that they have agreed with what the lobbyist said and what Senator Benton said. I just it bothers me because I don't want us, we talk about not fighting with people, I don't want to see us do something that gets us in bad light with the regional administrator or anything else, and it shouldn't be that hard to make a request to them for
rather than go back to them again, Ed, we'll go to Don Benton and ask Don to share this correspondence to see where we are with the correspondence.
You want to see the documentation. You want to see the proof.
This is relating to the clean water fees that they failed to pay.
No.
Did they really not pay us?
Any letters
and
stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So is that something you can get on to find the information?
Yeah, I'll
great.
I'll pay Donovan.
I'm sure Benton got that. What it was, a letter that said
Missouri State, the show me state.
Because you didn't bill me in a timely fashion, I'm not going to pay.
Right.
That was the summary of it. So that's what we're saying.
That only applies to 1 year's payment. The previous years, we noticed them and they just failed to pay.
Okay.
So.
So we only want to collect what appears to be appropriate.
We bring up to date.
No surprises.
The agreement. So. Anything else? Action. Holly.
We got Commissioner Barnes' photograph taken yesterday. Now that we have the board assignments, my office can get your photograph and your biographical and board assignment information up on the website. So that's
you get a copy of that at the post office.
Oh, I don't know if we have enough room on the website for all that.
Not enough space to do that.
Okay, that's it. Okay. Mark, anchor.
I get to go. Okay, on the agenda, you'll see two vacancy requests. We have two. The first is, as you recall, we appointed Heath Henderson as our Public Works Director. And when we did that, he vacated the division manager job, which is design and construction. Tom Grange was hired to fill that position, and that created a vacancy in the design section. We're in the middle of a very heavy design workload period because of all the roads and projects they've got going down there.
It's building season.
Oh, we're building Whipple Creek Bridge? Building the bridge?
Did I say that? We need a $7 million Public Works Trust Fund loan first. So anyway, Heath has asked for permission to replace Tom Grange as the design section chief. And the position is now vacant when Tom moved up.
Since the 18th, is that right?
December
18th, 2013.
Yeah, yes. When we appointed Heath Henderson on an interim basis, Tom Grange moved up on an interim basis to take the design and construction job.
Okay.
So this position's been vacant since then, and so Heath is really anxious to get on with hiring Tom's replacement.
I'm surprised he didn't ask for it before coming into the season.
So that one is time critical, you're saying?
Yes, I think the sooner
the season is upon us.
The sooner the better. Okay, so that one's approved. Okay, the next one is Kathy Curtis, a longtime HR representative, is retiring. And effective the 31st of July. I've known Kathy for a long time as Director of General Services. She was my HR representative, and I relied on her heavily to get things done that occasionally were very difficult, union grievances and eliminating substandard employees and things of that sort. Now, understanding that there may be questions about this one, I contacted every department director that Kathy provides support to. That is General Services, GIS, Application Services, Infrastructure Services, District Court, the Assessor, and the Treasurer. And the four directors that report to the board all said they'd like to see Kathy replaced. And Ellis Selga, the District Court Administrator, said we really need to replace Kathy. We
is that a compliment?
Pardon me?
Is that a compliment? We got to get rid of Kathy?
Well, when she retires, we sure would like to have someone with her skills and abilities continue her work. And she said, quite frankly, that if the board doesn't replace Kathy, they will hire their own HR rep over there. Linda Lotto, she said that, you know, they've done quite a bit of reorganizing. And they, as you know, Peter Van Nortwick has saved the county substantial mm-hmm. sums of money. They are nowhere near done with reorganizing. Plus, they're bringing in new technology, and they believe that replacing Kathy is an urgent requirement. Doug Lasher is reorganizing as well, and he definitely supports replacing her. So,
so they have different people in HR. Cover so many departments.
Yes.
Like she's covering yes. these three. And
yes.
And if she's not replaced, those three won't have anybody representing them.
Or what will happen is someone else has to pick up district court and everything slows way down.
Normally the process for all filling these vacancies is that they're handed out to the commissioners and we, unless they're really critical, it's already a vacancy and it's pressing, then we'll at that point can make exceptions. But normally we receive them, we do a little bit of homework and talk with whatever staff members we feel like in budget office, and then come back at the next meeting, you know, with a more informed decision. And that's what I'm comfortable with.
So
in this.
I think that that's kind of what Mark has done for us. With getting, we went out ahead of us on this and got those statements from those people, but I can kind of see the need that there not be a vacant time in between. And sometimes I'm a little bit surprised how long it takes us by the time we advertise.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Narrow it down from 100 applications down to 6 for interviews.
So aren't
if
you approve going short on positions too anyways?
Pardon?
In the next budget, aren't they going short on these positions?
I think they are already short.
Well, they have two vacancies, and in the 15-16 budget, Bob Stevens is going to take those two positions away.
Okay.
So this is not when did we know that this retirement was going to happen?
I learned like 3 weeks ago.
So we had 3 weeks. I would say the more heads up we can do, so we don't have the reason that, well, oof, yeah. Now we don't have time to follow the normal process. I don't like to get ourselves in that position. I like people to follow the normal process. If things are foreseeable, to go ahead and stay ahead of the curve so that we can each do our homework. I like to be able to do my own homework, and I certainly welcome others.
We're talking about the quarry.
I kind of have to agree with Tom that I think that that you got three managers here that are well trusted, and that and they've written a request to the commission here that they, you know, replace that person right away. And I think Mark, according to these letters, he must have went out and done a bunch of research. And I think Mark is recommending to.
I think recommend when tells us that we need to let the staff know ahead of time.
Yeah.
To come to us sooner, don't wait till the last minute. In this case here, I think I understand that we're going to fly with it.
I would think, you know, you've got to have trust in the managers, and if the manager screws up and doesn't do the job, David, you get rid of the manager.
Well,
some point in time.
Anytime we have somebody who's been in a position for many years, the natural thing is just replace them like and no definition and no opportunity to improve or somehow consider the flexibility of a smarter arrangement within your staff. So to me, it's not a question of yes or no. It's really a question of making sure that there's thought that's put into it,
that there's opportunity and there's freedom granted to be able to divvy up the task a little bit differently than they are. Otherwise, every position we've ever had will always just automatically get refilled, and we'd never optimize or improve the work force working together.
Well, according to all those letters there, every one of those have been reorganized. At least two of them said they've done a lot of reorganizing, saved a lot of money for the county.
So I think our request is to get them to us sooner.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, but I'm afraid that this is, we're going to have a vacancy here for a while that's needed.
They're not vacant. Yeah, this is July 31st.
But it'll be 6 weeks. It'll be vacant before we get it.
You got to
get
the
advertisement out for replacement.
Then it'll take 2 weeks to advertise at least, and then it's going to take another week to sort through it. Then you got to narrow down from 100 down to 6. Then you have to interview, and that's going to take a week.
Sounds like you've been there, done that.
I think we're already late. So
it sounds like you have your two votes.
I think you better do it. The message is to come to us sooner, please.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I would agree with you.
Okay. Anything else, Mr.
Chair? That's it, sir.
All right. Thank you all very much. I think we're done.
Here's your Mark.
Oh gosh.
Called to cancel the reservation, and somebody said it wasn't in there. And it's in there. It was in there. They just were looking at a different date, so I just was trying to talk to you.
Well, that could have been me.
It's fine.
But I looked where she told me to look. So I don't know.
I don't know either.
You got time. I have one thing I have to have you do today before you leave.
Okay.
And it'll be quick and easy.
Okay.
I've got it in here. Down? What's that mean? What we have out on the page is a message. When people write to you on the computer,
okay,
it sends out an automatic message that says, why am I recording? Stop.